The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are joined now by Matt Mayer, OpportunityOhio.org, president of Opportunity Ohio and a contributor to The Spectator. Matt, thanks for being on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Matt, you've got a piece in The Spectator called Why Trump Lost. Putting aside for the moment the fact that he hasn't quite lost yet, although, like you, I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. But let's talk a little bit about what happened this year and why it seemingly has not turned out as well as 2016, starting with the fact that you, like me, predicted that Trump was going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, looking at all the data that you had and being in a state as you are, like Ohio, that is a battleground kind of predictor of presidents kind of state, you know, you just the sentiment was he was going to squeak out an electoral victory by about 305, you know, 295, something in that ballpark. So the results that ended up coming in after election night have kind of twisted that a bit around and surprised at least me. I'm not sure about you, but you know, in some of the results just still don't quite make sense given what else happened in the country over on the election.
Yeah. And I mean, I do believe that there was quite a bit of voter fraud going on, a lot of irregularities. But putting that to the side for the time being, in your column here, why Trump lost, you know, one obvious fact is that Republicans generally did well. You know, Republicans gained seats in the House. Probably have held the Senate, although Georgia is going to ultimately decide that. But Joe Biden, if he did indeed win, had zero coattails. So let's kind of walk through the reasons, at least as you laid them out in your Spectator piece, why Trump's narrow victory in 2016 seems to have been reversed, starting with Trump fatigue.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, given what you just said, right, we at least held our ground for the most part in the Senate. We could end up losing maybe one seat if things go well in Georgia. Gained a good chunk of seats in the House. And it's not just that we gained seats in the House, right? We flipped a lot of seats. And the Democrats, as far as of now, have only flipped three seats. Two of those were North Carolina, where they did that redistricting, if you recall, that rejiggered the race to benefit them. So those make sense that they got that. So essentially, other than the two seats in North Carolina, the Dems, in terms of, you know, 435, you know, seats, were able to flip just one in the entire country, which would indicate, when you look at state legislatures we took over, the governorship we took over, that it was a very strong night for Republicans, except for Trump. So I think what that means is America likes Trump's policies. They just were enough of them, and enough places were tired of the Trump drama that they voted for Biden, but down ticket Republican the rest of the way.
I think you're right about that, Matt. And I do think that Trump fatigue is a factor. I got to tell you, I've been a major supporter of Trump's really from the beginning of his administration. I think he's done a terrific job as president, but I've got some fatigue. You know, I can really understand, and it's not mostly Trump's fault. You know, it's mostly the endless attacks on him. But obviously, he's a lightning rod. A lot of people were tired of the drama.
I'm like you. I'm a big supporter. A lot of my friends are, and especially of the policies. Right, I think the policies, frankly, have been stronger than what even Reagan put in place, I could argue. But even I found myself on the Twitter stuff, on some of the attacks like on John McCain, where you're just like, oh my gosh, like I got tired of having to defend the personality rather than the policies, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think you're not the only one. Now, the second thing you itemized in your column was 4 years of pounding in the press. And we really need to emphasize this. I mean, here's a guy, every time anybody looked at a newspaper for the last 4 years, the headlines they would see were anti-Trump, every newspaper in the country. You know, all the broadcast TV networks, you know, the newspapers. In that context, it's kind of amazing that Trump held up as well as he did.
It's actually utterly amazing. I mean, the way I like to frame this is, so Trump in 4 years was getting about 90% or more negative news coverage, right? And to give you a perspective, in 8 years, Obama ended up getting about 80% positive news coverage, okay? So did very little wrong according to the media, and Trump did virtually everything wrong. Obama nothing wrong. Trump virtually everything wrong, and still the man barely lost his reelection. And I like to say, can you imagine if instead of 90% negative, it was quote only 60% negative for 4 years? My guess is he would have easily won reelection. But a lot of what ended up happening in terms of that Trump fatigue, where you know your suburban women, the folks that kind of walked away from him. In many ways, they walked away, I think, because they were driven away by the media's constant negative narrative about Russia, about Trump being a white supremacist, which he's not, right? I mean, they even said the man wanted to sleep with his own daughter. I mean, that, like, just nothing was beneath them to say and attack him on.
Yeah, that's right. I think, you know, it's really amazing that with, as you point out, Obama getting overwhelmingly positive coverage, Trump getting virtually nothing except negative coverage. Trump got more votes in this election than Obama ever got. You know, that's kind of an extraordinary achievement.
That's exactly. And keep in mind, right, this gets back to this broader narrative. I mean, you know, he only looks like he's going to lose nationwide popular vote by 3.5% to Biden, which in all accounts, that means on the state by state basis, he should have actually won a fairly comfortable electoral margin victory. So that's what's, again, one of those odd things about the election was closer than people thought, but yet he still somehow lost.
Now, let's go to the third factor that you itemized as reasons for the presidential election's outcome. And this is one that needs to be talked about more. And that is the presence of the libertarian Joe Jorgensen on the ballot in most, if not all states. And there were states where the libertarian candidate really hurt Trump.
Oh, without a doubt. In Georgia, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Arizona. I mean, her vote total in most of those states is greater than the delta between Trump and Biden. So if you presume, like I do, that most libertarians who vote, if they didn't have the libertarian choice, would have voted for Trump, you know, it's just like in 2016 when Jill Stein kind of took votes away from Hillary that hurt her. I think it's clear the libertarian, you know, candidate took Trump out this time. And again, I say to my libertarian friends, congratulations, you just helped elect a guy that will do more to undermine individual liberty than Trump would ever do.
You know, I understand the appeal of libertarianism, and I would argue that every strand of American conservatism is largely libertarian. And in fact, you could define the different types of American conservatism in terms of how that libertarian instinct manifests itself, you know, but they all have got that libertarian core. And so I understand the appeal of libertarianism. I do not understand the appeal of the Libertarian
Party. Totally
agree. Party.
Totally agree.
Do not understand.
Yeah, I totally
it because,
agree. Yeah, there's lots of things I believe in that are libertarian ideas, right? But we live in a two party system, whether you like it or not. We're not Europe. 1% doesn't get you a seat in parliament. If you vote for a third party candidate, you're throwing away your vote, or in some cases, helping the other side or a side more antagonistic to your views win. And that's what happened in 2020.
Yeah, that is entirely foreseeable and predictable. And then the last item you itemize, you've got about 2 minutes left in this segment, Matt, but the last item you itemize is an interesting one to me, and that is the fact that the Atlanta metropolitan area has come to really dominate Georgia's vote. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Biden ran up, you know, my last tally was about a 640,000 vote margin in the eight counties surrounding Atlanta. In comparison, in the 21 other counties in Georgia that he won, he only gained about 140,000 vote margin. So it's a huge swing in that city. And what I try to say now is, look, if the Republicans want to try to win Georgia in presidential elections going forward, and even these two Senate seats coming up, they better understand that it looks more and more like Atlanta is becoming like Chicago and Illinois and New York City and New York, with giving such enormous vote totals to the Democrat candidates statewide that the rest of the votes in the state, even though they're red, most of the other places, can't possibly make up the margin. So that's something that the Republican Party is going to need to figure out, or it's going to start losing Georgia consistently in statewide elections.
And it's a twofold problem. One is that there are, in fact, a lot of blue votes in the Atlanta metro area. But the second is that these large urban centers are the haven for voter fraud. And that's a big factor.
No, that's exactly right. And this is what we're going to discover, how much voter fraud there was when it all boils down to the investigations are going to do, the votes, the vote recounts are going to do. And so, you know, that's the piece we just have to keep in mind is, you know, when you have that many votes and mail-in ballot becomes the way it happens, you have to just understand there's going to be fraud. And we know there is, but how much is there or was there? That's the piece that we have to figure out, right?
We are up against a break here. We're going to be back with more from Matt Mayer after these messages.
Seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We are talking with Matt Mayer, president of OpportunityOhio.org and a contributor to The Spectator. Matt, you've got another piece in The Spectator called The Trumpist Agenda Going Forward. And I think it speaks to what's on the minds of a lot of conservatives and Republicans, assuming that Trump is more or less departing the stage. He's not going to go away. But what are the elements of Trumpism that you see moving forward?
Well, so, I think from a broad standpoint, when you think about Trumpism, right, I think what you have to look at is, you know, a trade policy that focuses on putting the worker first and what's best for America first, and realizing that, look, you know, we don't like tariffs necessarily as conservatives, but sometimes tariffs in the short term are critical to get the other side to the table, so you can eliminate them in the long term on both sides of the aisle and get better, fair trade negotiations. And I think that's what he did with NAFTA and it was doing with China in that first phase of the deal. I think it also means, you know, again, lower taxes, an attack on the regulatory state, especially for farmers and small businesses that, you know, the Obama folks really amped up regulations to a degree, which is why we had such a stagnant recovery. It's the focus on the federal judiciary and making sure that they're good originalist on the bench, whether it's the appellate court or the Supreme Court, you know, in the case of Amy Coney Barrett. You know, it's the continued movement towards a kind of federalism system where states have a little bit more power. It's energy in independence, because that's both good for America from a job standpoint, from a consumption standpoint, from a cost standpoint, but also from a national security standpoint, to be untied from the Middle East to the degree we now are. So there are a lot of elements to Trumpism, and I think, you know, that's what the voters, I think, seem to support, and they just felt they wanted to do that without Trump in the White House.
You know, it's interesting, Matt, because when you tick off the elements of Trumpism, it's pretty much a traditional conservative agenda, right? I mean, less regulation, lower taxes, federalism, conservative judges and justices in the federal judiciary. You know, there's nothing about that that outline that traditional conservatives haven't been arguing for a long time.
No, you're absolutely right. I think where there's a difference is in the trade negotiation area, the trade area where, you know, Republicans tend to hate tariffs and oppose all kinds of tariffs. And Trump has used those fairly effectively, I think. And so that would be one area. And then the second area really is on how he approached foreign policy in terms of things like NATO in other countries where, you know, Republican establishment folks have been very Davos oriented. And I think Trump kind of really looked down upon the Davos crowd in the you know, the supranational organizations like the UN, the WTO, WHO, these groups that, again, you know, put every country's interest ahead of America's. And Trump didn't do that. So that's where things like you know, making NATO partners come to the table to start paying their fair share. And again, I say this with all seriousness. You know, look, they're gonna fet Joe Biden, and Biden's gonna love it because, you know, the Europeans are, they want to get back to America taxpayers paying the share of NATO their defense so that they can divert their funds to social welfare programs that they have in Europe, while, you know, we defend them from everything under the sun. And I think Trump didn't want to have any of that. And so too often Republicans have not been strong enough on in those arenas where I think Trump really was.
I think that's exactly right, Matt. And to me, one of the most revealing things about the Trump presidency is, you know, Trump ran on the slogan America First. And I heard that. And I thought, well, yeah, that sounds like the job description of the president. That's what he's supposed to do, right? Put America first, put American citizens first.
That's exactly right.
And liberals
that's
consider
exactly
that
right.
to be a scandal.
Some of these folks out of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, but the Democrats considered that to be a scandal that a president would put America first. I thought that was really clarifying. And I think you're absolutely right that what distinguishes Trump from a lot of other conservative Republicans is that orientation, America first. And we saw it in trade. We saw it in the fact that he ran a strong foreign policy. You know, you can avoid overseas conflicts by being weak and knuckling under, you know. But he didn't do that.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He didn't, John. And here's what's important, right? Everybody forgets that America first, and Trump said this multiple times, that's not some jingoistic, overtly nationalistic position, because he would always say, but I fully expect that our opponents, allies, enemies, you name it, are going to put their countries first. And I expect when we negotiate that's their position, and I respect them for that. But I'm putting America first now instead of putting other countries and other interests first. And that's why he wanted to get us out of Afghanistan and out of Iraq and less tangled into the Middle East, because I think he knew we've been spending American blood and treasure for places that don't have the national security impact today that they did 20 years ago. And I think he's right about that. And, you know, when he fired Esper from the Defense Department, you know, a week ago, you know, people just like, oh, I can't believe he did that. And it's like, well, it was clear you knew why, because Esper was going to drag his feet to delay pulling everybody out of Afghanistan before his term was over. And I think Trump wants those troops out of Afghanistan before January 20th at noon so that he can say, I got America out of that war that made no sense for us to be there anymore.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you're right about trade, too. Trump and Trump didn't keep this a secret. You know, he said over and over, look, I'm a free trader. And when we have tariff negotiations, the first thing I'll say is, well, how about if we just take them all to zero on all sides? Oh, no. You know, nobody wants to do that. And so I think you're right. I think that, you know, he selectively used tariffs to get better trade arrangements with countries like Canada and Mexico, redoing NAFTA, and also with China.
Yeah, and I think, look, John, this is really important, right? Because, you know, you deal with this and I deal with this, right? All these never-Trumpers, the Lincoln Project, that, you know, my former governor, John Kasich, who, you know, did a poor job here in Ohio for 8 years. But, you know, let me just say, you know, I'm astounded at conservatives, Republicans, those on the right, who voted for Biden and wanted Biden when if you and I always say, like, you know, you got to go below the president and see what his administration has accomplished, right? Because there are men and women, thousands of them, that have been working hard for 4 years to put in place a very conservative agenda. I would argue one possibly more conservative and successful than Reagan's 8 years in office. And I would say, what in Lord's name do you think a Biden or Clinton administration would have done or will do? Why would you possibly vote against Trump? Yes, there's all the drama that comes with Trump, but it's underneath him that the conservative policies that we have been fighting for our lifetimes have been getting done, actually done. The think tank stuff, AEI and Heritage, the tens of millions they spent every year to get virtually nothing done, started getting done under Trump. That is an important piece that my friends that on the right that were in that Never Trump Lincoln Project, you know, Trump's the bad guy movement, just I fail to understand how their brain didn't get around that very basic idea.
I don't think history will be kind to the Never Trumpers. And I think as we go forward, Matt, that your points are very well taken. I think that when the dust settles, people are going to look back at Trump's 4 years in office as a highly successful term that really points the way to the direction that conservatives and Republicans should be going in the future. We got to run to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Michael Warren Davis, the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine.
exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.